today on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown.
It's another double dose right here on the Talkin' Rock podcast. And up first, it's Al Jorgensen from Ministry. He just celebrated his 60th birthday. We talk about that, the tour, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
I mock it, basically. If I sound sarcastic, I'm happy.
We did get a little political, but not too much. I did ask him about rockers on the other side of the aisle he wouldn't mind working with. We talked about social media. Oh, and you'll never believe whose music he's producing now.
I just partied with him the other night. Quite the interesting dude.
That's just the tip of the iceberg as far as our conversation is concerned with Al Jorgensen. Now we shift gears. Phil Labonte from All That Remains. Of course, I'd ask him about the recent death of guitarist Ollie Herbert and how important it is to keep the band alive after his passing.
We're going to continue on. You know, the band's not going to end.
Phil tells us all about the brand new record, Victim of the New Disease, which drops tomorrow, November 9th, as I record this. He touches on filling in for Ivan Moody from Five Finger Death Punch a couple years ago, veteran causes, his love of shooting, and a ton more with Phil Labonte. Phil and Al Jorgensen today on Talkin' Rock.
This is Talkin' Rock. Talkin' Rock. Your backstage pass to some of your favorite rock artists. Here's your host, Meltdown.
Thank you as always for checking out the Talkin' Rock podcast. I do appreciate it. Two big interviews for you today. And up first, it's Al Jorgensen. I've had the pleasure to interview Al in person before, and this is the first time on the phone. He's a great guy to talk to, a very fun, entertaining interview, and you wouldn't expect it. You'd think that this guy would be intimidating. He's got, you know, the face tattoos and, the piercings and, you know, all the stories that have gone before him, but he's a great interview, so much fun. It's a great listen. And then Phil Labonte coming up here second from All That Remains with a new record dropping tomorrow, November 9th, and, of course, the passing of his friend and guitarist, Ollie Herbert. We'll talk about that, of course, coming up here in just a bit. Real fast, before we get into Al's interview, just a little bit of housekeeping. If you like this podcast, by all means, please give it a 5-star rating on iTunes. You can write a review, share with your friends, subscribe as well, because we've got some killer interviews coming up. I mean, we're just kind of cracking the surface now. It's funny how these interviews just start to pile up. It's like a snowball rolling downhill. So I've already got some interviews already locked and loaded, getting ready to fire up for next week as well. So like I said, subscribe, share, 5-star rating if you get a chance. And by all means, you can leave a voicemail for me as well at 248-586-2988. Up on social media at Meltdown WRIF or at Talking Rock 1. All right, now that that's out of the way, I tried contacting Al Jorgensen a bunch of times. This is like the weirdest thing. They gave me the number to call. I tried calling. The voicemail message I kept getting kept saying a different number. I must have tried this 5 times. Anyways, we finally did connect with Al Jorgensen, and here it is today on Talkin' Rock.
Hello.
Hey, Al, how are you?
I'm good. Yourself?
The good. Well, that was the craziest thing. I called the number. It said to leave a number for a totally different number. I tried it like 5 times, but I'm glad we made the connection.
Oh, that's weird, yeah. Here we are.
That's right. I was thinking about this. I think I interviewed you back in 2009 in person at the Grammys when we were doing those things, you know, like where you got the Staples Center and stuff. And I'm trying to recall, have you ever won a Grammy? I know you were nominated, what, 5 or 6 times or something, right?
I think it's 6, and I'm 0 for 6, so that's not a very good batting average. But I talked to my friend Dwight Yoakam, and he was nominated 8 times before he finally got his. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, the 8th time's a charm, I suppose. I mean, that's that kind of stuff. I mean, like with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and all that, you don't seem like the kind of person that would kind of phase.
I've never lost a single minute of sleep over this shit. So, yeah, I'm good.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
I'm happy for them, you know, and I'm whatever. Listen, man, if you're doing this for either hardware or accolades, then you're really in the wrong business, because it's such a political game. It really depends on what label you're on, how much lobbying interest is involved in your favor that puts money in the bottom line of the people that own whatever corporation owns whatever corporation that owns the corporation that you're on. So it really has nothing to do with what you're doing or the music you're doing or the people you're reaching or anything. So I really mock it, basically. If I sound sarcastic, I'm happy.
It makes perfect sense. So, hey, by the way, happy belated birthday, man. A big milestone birthday. Did you celebrate in fine fashion, or what'd you do?
Hell yeah, man. I got my AARP card, and I went to, I got a discount at Golden Corral Buffet for the Senior Center at 3:30, and then I went and caught a movie at 5:30 with the seniors discount. I must have saved all of $17 for the whole night. It was awesome, man. I love being 60.
Man, you know, I'm going to be turning 50 next year, and it's like, I don't know, man, I pull up and get my kids at school or whatever the case is, I'm crying. Metallica or something heavy, and it's like, I just don't feel 50. You can't feel 60, can you?
No, I definitely don't feel 60. I feel more like about 80 or 90 is what I've been through. But it's nice to have those seniors discounts at this point. But no. Of course I don't feel 60. It's really weird. I know other 60-year-olds, and they don't feel 60. I have two friends that just turned 60 right before I did, Gary Newman and Jello Biafra.
Mm.
And they beat me to the punch by a couple months, and we were all sitting in a room talking about, you know, just shooting the crap about, like, what it's like to be 60, and we all had the same complaint. It's like, you don't feel 60, everything's great, and all of a sudden you get this mail, and all your mail now, your snail mail, and even some of the emails are all about AARP, and so you're reminded every day you're old, even though you don't feel it. So, but, you know, at some point you finally start taking advantage of the discounts, and you buy into the fact that you're old, and you get a Golden Corral buffet for next to nothing, you know, and whatever, man.
Well, that's cool. Well, you're out there on tour. You're tearing up the landscape. And on this tour, if I read correctly, are you playing the entire latest album on this tour, and then of course hits and stuff from the past?
Yes, that's exactly right. The first 48 minutes of the set will be exactly the album, Americant, and in sequence. And then we take a 5-minute break, and then we're going to come back out and pay homage to Land of Rape and Honey, which just turned 30.
30,
this year,
man.
So,
yeah.
So even my albums are of legal age to drink. Okay? So even my albums are drunk. That's awesome. So anyways, we do about half an album of Rape and Honey, then we'll close it out with some things off Psalm 69 and Mind is Terrible Thing It Takes, and then maybe some surprises if the audience is so willing and letting us senior citizens come back out and entertain them for a while. And a good time will be had by all.
And speaking of anniversaries, today's the 27th anniversary of Jesus Built My Hot Rod. Would you consider that like maybe the biggest well-known song of your career?
Well, it's funny, just by numbers-wise, from what I understood, when that was released as a 12-inch vinyl single on Warner Brothers Records on, whatever, 27 years ago, at that point in time, that was the largest-selling single in Warner Brothers history, even above Madonna and Prince.
Wow.
So it has since been eclipsed many times over by many other people, but at the time, it was just like a weird little footnote in history that, like, a crazy song with a crazy person singing it that was drunk off his ass in our studio, Gibby Haynes,
right.
singing some made-up lyrics, wound up as the number one selling single of Warner Brothers history for a while. So it's pretty funny, and it's the only reason we don't do that live. I love that song, but really, I've tried to do it a couple times where I sang it instead of Gibby, and there's nothing like a drunk Gibby from the Butthole Surfers to, like, sing that song. I just can't replicate that. I mean, that's called keeping it real. So we'll leave that one out, but we'll do a bunch of other stuff this tour.
Yeah, now, of course, the election happened yesterday and whatnot, and you're pretty outspoken in your politics. I asked Tom Morello about this. I actually asked Corey Glover about this last week as well. Would you be willing to collaborate with anybody on the other side of the aisle musically in the future, or have you in the past?
The closest collaboration I've ever had with a Republican was when I was announcing Grammy nominations with Kid Rock. And
a good friend of mine, by the way, so watch what you say.
Well, I got to say that we didn't get along because he offered me some cocaine, and I asked where the needles were. He didn't have it. He just had a straw, and I just said, well, you know, I'm a shooter, not a sniffer, dude. So that's where we left it off. That was the closest collaboration I've ever had with a Republican.
But if I'm just throwing this out there, if like Nugent or someone came to you, would you ever do anything with anyone like that, or is it just you just can't get across that line?
No, not with the Nuge, but just because he's silly. I mean, what he does is just living in this like right wing bubble. But listen, I've actually been on the Alex Jones show a bunch of times, and I actually get along with Alex Jones. I mean, he's ridiculous and all this stuff, but you know what? A lot of that's an act. So, you know, I'll give him that. He makes money off selling, erectile dysfunction pills and vitamins to, like, right-wingers that can't get it up. And that's fine if that's how you make your money. But in person and on the phone and all that stuff, he's not a bad dude. He's a little bit kooky. But so what? Would I work with somebody? Ted Nugent, definitely not. But, like, yeah, anyone else? Sure. I mean, that art does not... involve like your political basis for artistic basis. I'll take the artistic basis on establishing relationships any day over political relationships because here we go. I've worked with a Republican before. I've Billy Gibbons with Revco Records, and he's a pretty staunch Republican, and I'm friends with Alice Cooper. He's another staunch Republican, so it's not just like a black and white line that says no, you know? It really depends on the person.
Yeah, I saw on your Twitter today, and I don't know if you handle it or you got some people that do that, but you guys actually quoted a quote from Billy Gibbons just today about Jesus Built My Hot Rod.
Yeah, he loves, he told me like 3 speeding tickets on that song. So, he said he actually wanted me to pay for him. So
that'd be great if we could send our speeding tickets to rock stars. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, you know, that would be good. Yeah. You know what? If that comes with the territory, so be it. If your song inspires, like, reckless driving, I'm all for it. Let's do it.
Yeah, Sammy Hagar would be mailing people money all over the place.
Exactly. There you go.
So, hey, I want to ask you about this. So, Americant came out in March, and are you one of these guys that, like, stockpiles stuff? Like, I mean, you make the record and whatnot, but do you just have, like, just all sorts of material that you didn't use ready to go for anything in the future, or how does that work?
No, actually, we wing it. It's completely flying by the seat of your pants. I just knew that it'd been a while since I'd done a record, and I woke up November 9th and didn't really like the results of what was going on, so I just said, you know, I'm going to make a record. But I had a completely blank canvas and just started piecing it together from there. Generally, when I do a record, the first month is just like... it's almost like if you're writing a book, the first month is research and development, okay? So you start, just preening over samples and newscasts and things like this and going, okay, what the hell is going on around here? And then you take it from there. But I never go in with a real... anything set in stone. It's a complete blank canvas when I go in there. I mean, literally, music, lyrics, content, agenda, anything. It just really depends on, I seem to sleep better at night when there's a Democratic president. So when Obama or Clinton were presidents, I would just basically turn the mirror around at myself and go, well, what should I sing about? Let's see. I'm a useless kind of like drug addict and I've had failed relationships and stuff. So I should write about that, you know, because then it's about, you know, me while there's Democrats. And then when there's Republicans, I finally get to turn the mirror around and go, you know what? You guys are douchebags, and I'm going to sing about that. So, if you really want to simplify it, it pretty much boils down to that.
Now, when did you, the political bug, like, bite you? When did this start?
Well, let's see. I'm 60 now, so I'd have to say 50 years ago, a half century, when the 1968 Democratic Convention happened in Chicago, I ran away from home, went down to Grant Park and got tear gassed when I was 10 during those riots. So I've seen riots on the left, I've seen riots on the right, and I'm the Joker stuck in the middle, I guess. But probably about 50 years, I've been, you know, pretty much following this up, because you have to remember, even at 10 years old, the first thought that really consumed me was that during the Vietnam War, is that in about 5 years, I was 10 years old, but at 15, you would have to register for the draft. Mm. And I really didn't want to be a bullet stopper in Southeast Asia. I just didn't think that was cool, even at the age of 10. So I started paying attention, and it's a bug that I've never really gotten rid of.
Yeah. You working on any other projects besides, I mean, you got your tour and you got your record out that came out in March and stuff. Any other things in the side? I see are you mixing David Hasselhoff's record or something like that?
I just did a song with the Hoffmeister. Yes, I just partied with him the other night. quite the interesting dude. There's the obvious famous YouTube clip of him,
right.
and then there's Baywatch. And I would say after meeting him, he's somewhere in between.
That's awesome. So that was the first time you met him, because I read an interview with you like a month ago. You hadn't met him, so now you guys are buddies.
I wouldn't go that far, but it was quite interesting. Yeah, he's actually a pretty cool dude, man. But I was amazed to see, like, usually when you see somebody on YouTube in that state of distress, that generally if you see them out again, they're like completely cleaned up and sober and all that stuff. And no, the guy still rages. I got to give him that. I love the guy.
Now, he's older than you, right?
Maybe. I don't know. Is there people older than me? I don't know. Jello and Gary Newman are about 2 months older than me or something, but I think the Hoff is about 4 years older. Yeah, 4 or 5.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's funny, because you bring up David Hasselhoff, and he's done a million things, but that video where he's eating a hamburger on the floor always seems to come to the front.
Dude, it's way better than Baywatch.
Yeah, that's for sure. So did you guys do a, I don't know of you, but you, I think in that article I read, he was doing a cover of Sweet Caroline or something?
Yeah, that's what was really weird. I had a double dose of senility. First, David Hasselhoff singing on a Neil Diamond song. So I'm basically mixing things for people that have AARP cards, okay? So it was kind of strange, but it's actually kind of a catchy song. I never noticed that before, and the Hoff just sang his ass off on it. So I was pretty impressed with his conviction on trying to make this sound good, and we just kind of did this like EDM kind of like Euro disco version on it, and he seemed to be happy on it, and we got paid. So winner winner chicken dinner.
Yeah, no doubt. He's that guy's huge overseas, right?
Dude, we played there in 1995. I'd never even heard of Baywatch or Knight Rider or any of this stuff. And Ministry checked into this hotel in Hamburg, Germany, and there was about, I'd say, 450, 600, like, old women with, like, lingerie, like, ready to throw. And I remember looking at Paul Barker and going, dude, this is a problem, man. We really need to get our fans a little bit younger. This is like, you know, 25 years ago, and I thought they were there for us. It turns out we were staying at the same hotel as Hoff in Hamburg, Germany. I didn't even know who he was, and it was just crazy. He's like a sex symbol over there, man.
That is hysterical. Hey, I know I'm running out of time here. I got a couple more things I just want to touch on with you real fast. All right, first of all, are you a social media person, or do you stay away from that stuff?
I haven't used social media in about 5 years. Twitter or Facebook, yeah, I have people that do that stuff, but I generally tend to stay away from that. I think at least in nothing but trouble,
right?
If you know what I mean. I'm not the Kanye West of industrial or anything. Okay.
So I was going to ask you, how do you think social media has like changed society?
Well, I have an album specifically about that that came out right before AmeriCat. It was under the name Surgical Meth Machine that I did on, I believe it's Nuclear Blast Records. And that pretty much tackles, within the first song, my entire opinion of social media and how it is like ravaged society, because technology is always more advanced than society is able to deal with it. And I just really think that, have you ever seen that Netflix series Black Mirror?
I have not seen that, no.
You should check it out. That pretty much sums up. Charlie Brooker did this whole series called Black Mirror that pretty much sums up my opinion on social media. It's a pretty dangerous thing. What started out as the age of information is now dissolved into the age of disinformation.
Mm-hmm.
And what seemed like a really promising thing at the time with knowledge at your fingertips has turned into just, you know, garbage. But I think it can be turned around, but I just think that society needs to catch up with the actual technology. And so, in other words, the verdict is still out. But for right now, I'm kind of staying away from it.
Yeah. Hey, final thing here for you, and we'll let you fly. Al, by the way, I'll see you December 1st here in Detroit, the Majestic. I had the pleasure of standing on the side of the stage when you played Rock in the Range a couple years ago. That was awesome.
That was fun, yeah. That was a good one.
So, final thing here for you. I mean, you talk about your AARP, you're 60 years old and stuff. I mean, how many more years you got in the tank, you think?
Well, however many the good Lord allows me to stay on this planet and just keep kicking ass. That's about it, you know, just take it a day at a time. We'll see. My health is good, so that's something new.
You're just gonna keep rocking as long as you can.
Well, I mean, it's either that or work at Denny's. I really have no other social skills or job skills. So it's do this or be a busboy. So I've got no choice.
Well, if you work at Denny's, you can get free meals all the time.
Oh, man. Bada bing. You got me on that one.
Hey, Al, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Thanks so much for the time. December 1st here at the Majestic in Detroit. Good luck on the tour. The album's awesome, and we do appreciate it.
Hey, thanks a lot, man. I'll talk to you soon.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Up next, it's Phil Abante from All That Remains. Like I said in the intro, a lot of things happening with that band, including a brand new record, which we talk a lot about, and the passing of guitarist Holly Herbert just last month in mid-October. So a lot of things happening. I was connected with Phil via one of these three-way calls, and we got right at it. It's Phil Abante from All That Remains today on Talkin' Rock.
Hey, what's going on?
Hey, not much. There's a little bit of a hum, but if we keep talking, it'll be okay. I hear. I get the feeling. So.
Okay. Yeah. I'm just driving, so.
Yeah. No problem, man. Well, good to hear your voice, dude. It's kind of funny. I was just talking to Al Jorgensen from Ministry, and now I've got you kind of two ends of the political spectrum, so to speak, eh?
Maybe. I'm not really familiar with Al's politics, though.
Yeah, there you go. Well, anyways, first things first. I mean, sorry to hear about the passing of your friend. I mean, talk a little bit about that.
It was a shock, you know. He's 44 years old, you know, and he wasn't really a big partier, you know. He would go hang out with people and stuff, but he wasn't. He didn't really do a lot of. He didn't do drugs. He didn't really drink a lot. He smoked pot once in a while, you know. But that was the extent of it. And so yeah, it was a big shock, and we're still processing it and trying to figure out how it is that we move forward and what that means and stuff. So it sucks.
Yeah, and it came out today or yesterday, whatever, that the memorial service has been canceled for this weekend. Is that true?
Yeah, that we weren't associated with that.
Okay.
That was something put on by his widow or done by his widow. We weren't involved. So I don't have any information about it. You know, obviously we wish her the best, but yeah, I don't know what happened, why it was canceled, what you know, I don't know anything about it. So
yeah. So, moving forward, like you said, you're not really sure what you're going to do. I mean, this is still pretty fresh and stuff. But how important is it to keep the band alive that you and him created?
We're definitely gonna move. You know, we're gonna continue on. You know, the band's not gonna end. It's going to be different. It's going to be weird. We've got someone that's filling in for this European trip that we got coming up at the end of the month. He'll be announced actually tomorrow. And he's the guy that Ollie would have wanted to fill in, you know, to replace himself. And then we'll start looking for a full-time replacement, I assume shortly, because we've got stuff that we want to do next year. We don't want to, like, just kind of forget, like, let the record that's coming out tomorrow be just kind of pushed aside. Ollie would have wanted us to play the song. He was excited about the way the record sounded, and he was excited about, you know, a lot of the stuff on it, so he wouldn't want us to stop. So we just got to figure out what that actually looks like and how we do that.
Yeah. And so the new record's called Victim of the New Disease, and like you said, it comes out tomorrow. Tell us a little bit about this album.
It's our heaviest record since probably 2010, in my opinion, since For We Are Many. We've heard a little bit of feedback about the record, and there are some people that think that it's heavier than For We Are Many, and I'm comfortable with that. You know, we just wanted to do a record that was different than our last thing, which is kind of our MO. I mean, people often talk about the progress of a band, and they think of an arc or you know, some kind of like a linear fashion, and we always try to move perpendicular to where we're at, as opposed to moving parallel, you know. So we've wanted to continue to remain a band that tries new things and does different stuff, and so we decided the best thing for us at this point was to go and just put out a ball buster.
Yeah, definitely cranks. There's no question about it. I was listening to the three tracks that I got in it. I'll tell you what, Wasteland's probably my favorite. Seems a little bit of a political tinge to it as well.
A bit, yeah. I try not to get too preachy on like politically and on records. I save that for Twitter.
Right.
If people want to listen to our music, I don't want them to feel like I'm trying to preach them. I want people to feel good listening to our stuff. I want people to be uplifted or feel like they can relate. So, like, if someone doesn't want to follow me on Twitter, all they have to do is just not follow me, and it's easy. Whereas if I'm writing that stuff in songs, then people might feel like I'm like they don't relate to this stuff that I'm saying, or they see things from a different perspective. So I try to keep the politics out of the. Out of the All the Remains. Politics that Phil talks about are Phil's politics. I don't speak for the band. The band doesn't have politics, really. So, you know, there's a couple things we agree on, but, you know, we're all different people, so.
Right. Now, this there's also a track on there with Danny from Asking Alexandria. Tell me how that came about.
That was, you know, I called him. You know, I mean, I've known Danny for a long time. All the Remains have toured with Asking Alexandria a couple times. Danny and I have mutual friends. We got a bunch of mutual interests. So I just hit him up. I said, Dan, we got this song that I think you'd sound great on. Well, you know, what do you think? Send him the song. He listened to it, and he's like, I'd love to do it. And we were like, all right, cool, do it. And he did it, and he sent it back to us, and we were like, we love it. So it was, you know, it was really easy. And when you're dealing with, you know, dude, you know, people that you're friendly with, it's not usually very difficult. It's not usually a trying thing to get the stuff done. And Danny was no exception. I mean, he knocked it out of the park, and I'm not exactly sure how long it took him to do it, but it, you know, he hit a home run, and we love the work that he did.
Yeah, it's kind of cool nowadays. Now, like what you're saying, he wasn't in the studio with you guys or anything. Kind of did his stuff separately, and then just sent it back to you.
Yeah, everything's done over email nowadays.
Yeah.
That email's way cheaper than a flight. Nobody wants to fly. You gotta take a whole day to do something. You can do that in an afternoon if you do email.
Yeah, it is crazy how the world's changed. I mean, even since, you know, your band started, what, like 20 years ago or something. I mean, it's just a whole nother planet.
Yeah, I mean, All That Remains first record was done on 8-at tape. So it was digital tape, but it was done to tape, not to a hard drive, you know. So I think we didn't use a Pro Tools and use an actual hard drive until I think it was like 2006.
Right. Man. Yeah, it is crazy. I talk to bands all the time that they don't even live in the same state and they record albums.
Yeah, you know, and that's in my opinion, that's really, really cool. Like, our bass player lives in Toronto, and our drummer lives out in Boston, and the rest, me and Mike, I live in New Hampshire, and Mike lives in Western Mass. And, you know, we kind of all converge in Western Mass, but the ability to communicate that we have nowadays is astounding, and it's really made, you know, working this type of way really, really awesome. And I understand there's a lot of people that telecommute to work nowadays and stuff, so it's the future, man. Living in the future rules.
Yeah. One thing that you do that I really, really like, as a matter of fact, I got my American flag hat on that a Marine gave me, is you're involved in all sorts of veteran causes.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I'm a vet, you know.
Oh, you are a vet? I didn't know that.
Yeah, I was in the Marine Corps in the 90s.
Oh, okay.
It's a long time ago, but, you know, I mean, that stuff, it matters to me. I've got a lot of friends that are vets, and, you know, I was married to a woman that was in the Marine Corps and that deployed and stuff, so I'm really familiar with a lot of the problems that you know, vets have after they come back home, and a lot of the issues that they tend to face when they, you know, with relationships and families and finding a job that doesn't involve shooting bad guys and you know, there's a lot of dudes that go to, you know, they go off and they're actually the guys that are fighting the wars, and they come home and they don't have a skill or whatever. So anything that I can do or that All the Remains can do to kind of help either, you know, help dudes find work or help dudes find peace if they had trauma or lost friends, you know, we love to be a part of that and kind of say thank you to people that you know, for whatever your opinion is on the politics side of war, people that really were there just helping their friends, you know.
Right. Yeah. No, that's awesome. I guess maybe I did know that you were a vet. I'm trying to think of that now. Now it's just you mentioned it. You know, the guys from Five Finger Death Punch, of course, big into veteran causes. And I know that you've talked about this before, but just like indulge me for a minute. When you filled in a couple years ago, tell me about that experience.
That was great. You know, I mean, it's always cool when, you know, your friends call up and they're like, hey, man, we got a problem. Can you come and help? And then you're like in a position where you can, you know, they just give me a call and said, hey, you know, what do you think? You know, what are you doing for the next couple of weeks? And I said to him, send me a set list. I'll do it. And I was on an airplane the next day. So it was a great experience, and I'm glad that Ivan's doing better now, and Ivan's feeling good. He sounds awesome. They just started their tour a couple nights ago. I think it was in Wichita was the first night, and I saw some video, and they're, you know, everything is just 100%. Even though Jeremy is you know, he's out of this tour because he's getting back surgery, but they sound great. You know, the Bad Wolves boys look great. The Breaking Benjamin boys look great. I'm excited for him.
Yeah, I did an interview with Ivan, and I've been in this business for almost 30 years, and Ivan wanted to do the interview on the lawn after the doors had opened up. So you can imagine the chaos that ensued when I was trying to talk to Ivan.
Yeah, I'm sure that there wasn't a whole lot of talking to Ivan. I'm sure there's a lot of people talking to Ivan.
Actually, it was actually very well controlled, and I couldn't believe how well it went. But it was great. You get any shooting in with Zoltan and that while you're on tour with them?
Not usually on tour, but I've gone shooting with Zoltan. I was in Vegas for a little while, and we went out and shot with this guy Frank from Rifle Dynamics. He makes some of the nicest AK-47s you'd ever want to get your hands on or could ever get your hands on. They're really, really great rifles. And so we went out and had a good time shooting some machine guns and some stuff. So it's fun.
Yeah, I've gone out shooting with my friend Matt from Pop Evil. I don't know if you know Matt. He's always ready to go out for a shoot. And then Chris and Brad from Three Doors Down, those guys love to shoot as well.
Oh, I didn't know those guys were in Three. Maybe I did know that. I feel like I might have known that, but I don't know the guys in Three Doors Down personally. But yeah, the guys in Pop Evil, I know those guys. And yeah, they're totally into, you know, getting out and putting some rounds downrange. It's fun.
Yeah, there you go. Well, listen, man, good luck on the new record and moving forward as well. And, you know, like I said, heartfelt condolences to you and the guys in the band, especially you. You and Ollie started this whole thing.
Yeah, Ollie joined in like 1999, so there was like 7 or 9 months where Ollie wasn't in All That Remains. Like, we got started at the very, very end of 98, and then he was the fifth person, because we wanted to have a five piece. I didn't want to play, I couldn't play guitar and sing. So we wanted to have a five piece, so Ollie was the last guy to join to like completely fill out the band, and then he stayed. You know, he was with me the longest, so yeah, it's hard, and it's something.
Yeah.
Weird.
Well, we appreciate your time. Thank you so much. And I appreciate your service and all the stuff that you do for the vets. And good luck on the new record, which drops tomorrow.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Phil Labonte from All That Remains right here on the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast. And, of course, Al Jorgensen from the Legendary Ministry right before that. And I got to tell you, man, the double dose, yeah, sounds pretty good. We're not even done yet. I've still got interviews I haven't even put together yet. So make sure you subscribe. Of course, like I said, if you guys want to leave a voicemail, by all means, 248-586-2988. Love hearing your voicemails. You can follow me on Twitter at MeltdownWRIF and follow the show at Talkin' Rock One. And normally my friend Al Beck is here to do some rock news, but he had to do a split early today. And we just, like I said, with this double dose, there's just a lot going on in the podcast today. So I think that should suffice. Hey, as always, thank you so much. Like I said, subscribe, check back periodically. Lots of interviews coming up. And thank you for listening to Talkin' Rock.